Welcome to the Sports and Shit Podcast presented by Anchor. Your hosts each week are Maddie.
But it burned. For me and her, it burned. There was a burning.
And the multi-talented Smitty.
There's worse ways to go than eating grilled cheese every day and having sex every day.
If you like sports sprinkled in with a little bit of shit, then this podcast is for you. Now, here are your hosts, Maddie and Smitty.
Welcome to the Sports and Shit Podcast. It is Season 2, Episode 16, sponsored by Lops Brewery in Woonsocket, Rhode Island. And I am Maddie, and my co-host is a premier cork soaker, Smitty.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You soak the corks.
I like to try to float things. I like things to float. I like buoyancy.
You do. You're an advocate for buoyancy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Things that are buoyant in the buoyant family.
Yeah, you do.
You do. You know, you're also a genius with sexual innuendo.
Thank you.
And tonight we were watching the Bruins, and Jack Edwards has incredible sexual innuendo in his announcing.
He does.
He really does. Tonight he said, "That was a tumbling muffin." And I had to tweet it out because I felt a little dirty when I heard that there was a tumbling muffin on the ice.
That's kind of like Betty White's dusty muffins.
Yeah, the dusty muffins, right. The sweaty balls.
Yeah. And on Saturday Night Live, they had Colonel Angus.
Colonel Angus.
And the cork soakers.
Yeah, the cork soakers. Don't get me wrong. I'm up for a little sexual innuendo every once in a while.
The pepper? So nice.
So nice. Hey, follow us on Twitter, because we do a lot of tweeting and things individually and as a group.
As a collective.
As a collective.
As family. A collective.
Yeah.
They're not coordinated tweets. We don't do that.
No, we don't do that. Sports and Shit Pod on Twitter. Sports Mini on Instagram. Send us an email, sportsandshitpod@gmail.com. I'm not quite sure our email is working because we haven't received an email in weeks. So just confirm that it's actually working. That would be fabulous. Hey, big show today. Two fabby guests today. Connor Ryan rejoins us again from Boston Sports Journal. We will talk some Boston Bruins. And John Butchergross.
Butchie.
From ESPN will join us and do five questions. And it's a wonderful conversation all the way around. Wonderful man.
A lot of fun with both guests.
Absolutely. It was really, really fun to do the... I really love doing the interviews, and I really enjoy when the guests seem like they really enjoy being a part of it, too.
Yeah, they do. They enjoy the banter, enjoy the questions, enjoy the interview, and we enjoy having them on. So it is a win-win for both parties.
No doubt. So let's get started with some news. The news is presented to you by Lops Brewing, a brewery and tasting room in downtown Woonsocket, Rhode Island, specializing in small batch ales and lagers. We're open 7 days a week, live music every Sunday at 2 p.m. Use coupon code SPORTS to get 10% off your online order. Visit www.lopsbrewing.com and follow at Lops Brewing for new beers and events. They have a new beer right now called First Pitch.
Yeah, just came out. So head on down this weekend. It's supposed to be 72 degrees yesterday.
Right.
Because this is going to come out on Sunday.
Right, yeah.
So
come out yesterday.
Come out yesterday down to the Lops Brewing. Yeah. Try out the First Pitch. Yeah. And should be a beautiful day to be outside. Nothing to tell you. We had a little drinking outside today. And that was fun.
We went over to Castle Island Brewery.
Yeah, got to check out the competition a little bit.
Yeah, we went over to Castle Island. I mean, we are an equal opportunity podcast. Mm-hmm. Castle Island had some excellent beers there outside. A little windy. Hey, how about the wind? Let's discuss the wind. It's just been windy for months. Like, it seems like every day it's so friggin' windy.
I don't get it. I don't understand it. I don't know why it's happening, but it's bothering me a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it was blowing our chips and dip in our plastic cups, like everywhere outside. It was, you know what? The sun was warm, and it was like 57 degrees, but it just felt cooler because of the wind, and it would have been a really, really super day if it wasn't for the wind. So anyway, here's the news, and it's presented by Lobs Brewing. First item, and we're officially creeped out by this. There's this webcam that looks like a real human eye and even blinks and frowns. This thing is weird. It's got the eyebrow and everything, like the wispy eyebrow and everything.
Why are we trying to have a webcam that's just going to... I mean, is the point to scare people away? It has to be, right?
I mean, it would have to be. Like, I don't know why you'd have an eyeball.
Because we're going creepy AF on that, right?
We absolutely are. I mean, you're going to put that right on top of your computer and have this eyeball, and it really looks like...
Oh, that's a webcam. Yeah, I thought it was supposed to be like a... You know, like one of those Ring doorbell things or something.
You gotta poke them in the eye.
Yeah, like a random doorbell. Eyeball just sitting there next to your doorbell. People just staring at you.
You know what? The webcam could pick up is this slaughter woman thinks she saw a baby dinosaur running through her backyard. So maybe that webcam would pick up the dinosaur running through your backyard.
Yeah, I mean, it probably wasn't. You know, probably wasn't like a small gator or a lizard or
a dog.
A cat. Right. I mean, I'm just thinking of things in Florida that would look more like dinosaurs.
Right.
You know, like a lizard or a gecko, a gator.
A gator, right.
But I mean, maybe she was, hopped up on the meth or something. And she saw a dog that she thought was a pterodactyl. Tyrannosaurus Rex.
A baby dinosaur in your backyard? I mean, say that out loud, lady. Like, seriously, that's not true. I mean, that's just not going to happen.
Maybe she's just all hopped up for the new Velocicoaster that's coming to Universal Studios in Florida in June. Maybe she just can't contain her excitement. And she's like, everything is dinosaurs. There's dinosaurs everywhere. Jurassic World, dinosaur adventure, all over the state of Florida. Let's go.
Maybe she saw the actual like exhibit like in her backyard. Like maybe someone left it there by mistake. You know, it's a baby dinosaur.
How big is it? I mean, my son used to have like little plastic dinosaurs. Can you imagine if it was like 3 inches tall and it was plastic? And she's like, yeah. There's a dinosaur in my backyard. You know, and she's just too scared to go, go near it. No. It doesn't blink. It's made out of plastic. You know, you're fine. You're okay.
Nothing to see here.
You'll survive.
You know, I don't think babies, dinosaurs, even though it's a baby, I don't think they come out that small. Like, I think.
Yeah, you're probably right.
When they push them out, they're pretty freaking
big.
You're
probably right.
So in a move that could shake up the way the world's most elite soccer is played, 12 top European clubs announced plans for a breakaway Super League that ended up getting kiboshed.
Yeah, this is unbelievable. Like a huge story around the world. I mean, here we could really care less.
Yeah, true.
But around the world, like the soccer community was pissed.
They were,
and they protested and got it kiboshed, like you said.
The fans were so distraught. They were protesting in the streets, and
yeah.
And of course, John Henry, owner of the Red Sox, owns part of Liverpool. And he was part of
the group that was starting the Super League.
Yeah.
And he had to do a video apology to the fans of Liverpool. And our good friend, Tanya Ray Fox, tweeted out at John Henry and quote tweeted the video. And right. She said, now do one for Mookie Betts. And I couldn't agree with her more.
I know. That was absolutely an excellent tweet. I think that's absolutely correct. And John Henry can be quite... I don't know if it's tone deaf or if it's just he.
Yes.
He probably is tone deaf. He just didn't understand, I guess, what that would do. And soccer is a big friggin' deal everywhere else.
Yeah, it is. I don't think he understands like social dynamics. I don't think he understands social cues at all. I think his best friends are computers and papers and printouts and graphs and charts. And that's probably why he's a multi-billionaire, whatever the hell he is. That's what he enjoys doing is looking at charts and graphs and plotting courses and making money.
Yeah, I mean, he must be a real fun date. Yeah, but the analytics, you know, he's a nerdy analytical guy.
Yeah.
And he's not a socially, like Bob Kraft is an extrovert. Mm-hmm. And John Henry is an introvert.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't like to speak to the media.
No.
He certainly doesn't like to be backed into a corner or questioned on anything that's done. And you're right. They even run the baseball team like this. They run it like it's just robotic. You know, it's just, you know, there's no, they take the human element out of a lot of what they do. And it's just, that was a poor choice of, a lot of money was probably spent on organizing.
Yeah, I'm sure they spent a lot of money trying to get it up and running, and they brought on new investors. Like, I wonder if this whole LeBron James investing in Fenway Sports Group was part of, you know, he was promised, you know, more money,
right,
because of this Super League, and then it fell through. So maybe LeBron's going to dunk on John Henry's.
It is interesting that the timing of LeBron joining the group was around the time that they're setting up the Super League. So yeah, that is a good point. And I wonder what will happen now that obviously promises were made and now broken. So that could, you know, make some things happen. Suspected rhino poacher was trampled to death by elephants.
This is phenomenal news. I mean, it's really phenomenal news.
Rhino poacher.
Yeah, so somebody who just goes out and kills rhinoceroses for money.
For pleasure or money. Oh, poaching, right, so money.
For like their, their tusks.
What is it? Does a rhino have a tusk? Yeah, they do. They have tusks, right? Well, elephants do.
Elephants have the tusks too. They kill elephants sometimes too. For the tusks are ivory.
Right? And they're obviously valuable.
Yeah, they make stuff out of the ivory.
So elephants trampled the poacher.
Yeah. We haven't talked about the zoo in quite a while.
I know, yeah.
But we need those type of elephants in our zoo.
Yes, we want elephants who trample people on command.
Right.
Because we because we would like just the option, you know, just the...
Well, what we want is we want people to come to the zoo and have it be a life and death experience for them. Your adrenaline is going to be flowing when you're at the Sports and Shit, Hunger Games, Naked and Afraid.
Yeah, it's going to be zoo. Bordering on the edge of disaster the entire time you're there.
Yes. Well, I mean, you should get the hint when you first walk in and that parrot tells you to go fuck yourself. You should know right then and there.
Yeah.
You're in for it.
You are. I mean, there's no friends in there. I mean, you're alone. You're on an island in a zoo, in our zoo. And that any false move or any move at all.
It's every man for himself.
Unbeknownst to you, you should be dead.
Yeah.
In any second. You know what I can't stand is this, you know, when people call 911 like for odd things. Like, you know, my delivery driver gave me a burnt pizza.
Have you seen this about what you're talking about?
Yeah, the woman who called animal control on a croissant after making it for a creature. So, yeah, so this woman
Is she from Florida? Does she live with the dinosaur woman?
I don't know where the hell she's from. Yeah, I mean, maybe she made it for the dinosaur.
She lives with the dinosaur woman.
Yeah,
they're you know, neighbors or something.
They spot a strange creature sitting on a tree limb, and it's in Krakow, Poland. Okay, so this is a strange creature.
There's got to be some kind of a Polish joke in there, right?
It's a croissant.
There's got to be some kind of a Polish joke in there.
There is.
I mean, it's, you know, fine, whatever. Yeah.
There has to be. But yeah, there's this croissant. First of all, how did a croissant get in a tree limb?
Maybe a bird took it up there.
Oh, okay. So you had
little takeout. Little takeout from, like, you know, from the Burger King or Dunkin' Donuts.
So in America, we'll take like a little bit of bread and throw it out for the birds, you know, in the backyard every once in a while. But in Krakow, Poland, they take a croissant. Well, you know what? I'm not going to waste a croissant.
I love
a pretty damn good.
I love me a good croissant.
Yeah, I don't want to take a croissant and put it and have it anywhere near a tree limb. I want to eat it.
Eat
the croissant. Yeah, so she was mistaking a small creature, she thought, in the tree limb, and it was a croissant.
Why would she care if there's a small creature in the tree?
Is it like a baby dinosaur? If you think it's a baby dinosaur, then that's noteworthy. I mean, that's newsworthy.
I mean, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But if you just think, hey, it's a creature, could be a squirrel, could be
I mean, that's what I'm saying, right? There's squirrels in trees all the time.
Yeah, I mean,
there's
all
birds in trees.
Cohabitate. Yeah, we're all together.
Chipmunks?
Right. Whatever. Beaver. Porcupine. You know, there were a couple of porcupines in a tree the other day. Someone, it might have been a Facebook friend of mine or something, had a picture of a couple of porcupines that were in a tree, like just in the backyard, just porcupines. You know, and you don't want to, I mean, you can't go up to a porcupine.
No.
Because they're going to put the quills right in your ass.
Yeah, they're prickly sons of bitches.
They're not to be messed with.
No. You know? Get some of those at the zoo.
Can you imagine if you had, like, if you had quills on you? How many?
I wouldn't have any left. I would have zero quills left. At this time in my life, I would have no quills. None quills. Zero quills.
You would look like one of those hairless cats.
I would look like a hairless porcupine.
You would be porking people for sure with your quills. But yeah, I probably wouldn't have them very long either, especially on the road. Like, I get out of the car.
That's what I mean. Like, I would not.
Quill right in your face.
I mean, I would not have any left.
Yeah.
No chance.
So there's these otters at the Georgia Aquarium.
we are
crushing the animal.
This is
planet.
Like Animal Kingdom.
It really is.
Who's that guy? Jack Lalanne. Yeah, I don't know.
Jack Lalanne's the older guy that, like, the big fitness guy. Jack Lalanne. He was like 86. And he was ripped.
Oh, Jack. Was it Jack Hanna? Was the animal guy?
That sounds right.
Used to go on like Johnny Carson and stuff.
Right. Okay. Yeah. With the different animals. Yeah. And freak Johnny out.
Right.
Yeah. So these otters at the Georgia Aquarium tested positive for COVID-19. Asian small clawed otters have tested positive for COVID-19 at the Georgia Aquarium. The aquarium released a statement last week saying that the otters began exhibiting mild respiratory symptoms such as sneezing, runny nose, lethargy, and coughing. They tested positive for SARS-CoV-2, but are expected to make a full recovery. The otters are off exhibit and being cared for by the aquarium's animal health.
Have they been vaccinated?
No, evidently they were not vaccinated because they did contract the disease.
How do you think they caught it?
I think they caught it from, it said, an asymptomatic staff member may infected them. Are they smooching the otters?
Yeah.
I mean, would you kiss an otter? Not in the mouth.
I'd kiss an otter before I'd kiss a porcupine.
Yeah, you would. You absolutely would. You'd kiss a team of otters.
I would kiss a team of otters, yeah. And I would kiss probably a faux creature in a tree that was a croissant. I would kiss that, too.
You know who you can't kiss on the mouth? Is this monk who chopped his own head off for good luck in the afterlife.
We'll let that one marinate for a bit.
So there was a monk.
That's a tough way to get the good luck.
Yeah.
That's a tough way to come about getting good luck.
Yeah, I'm not sure I want good luck enough, badly enough, to cut my own head off for it. You know what I'm saying? I think I want to roll the dice in the afterlife a little bit more. Because if I decapitate myself, I mean, that just screams bad luck. You know, that just screams nothing positive.
Would you rather just have straight bad luck for the rest of time and have your head? Or would you rather have the best luck but be headless?
Ooh, that's...
I think I'm going bad luck.
That's a tough one.
I think I'm going bad luck.
You know what? Honestly, in my life, I've had my fair string of bad luck anyway.
Yeah.
And I have my head. So I think I'd rather just keep my head and just keep rolling the dice on it because... I haven't had tremendous luck anyway, so I'm not even sure what good luck.
I mean, without a head, what good is good luck? Like you,
that's what I'm saying.
Like you can't see anything.
Nothing.
You can't hear anything.
Nothing.
Can't smell anything.
Nope. So a lot of the senses
can't taste anything unless you use your anus as a second mouth.
There you go.
Boom, boom,
well,
boom.
That's a solid point. That is a solid point because that is possible, evidently. That you can use your anus as a second mouth. Tend to pucker a little more. A Buddhist monk in Thailand chopped his own head off on his birthday in hopes the gruesome sacrifice would bring him luck in the afterlife. And this guy, I'm not going to pronounce his name, 68 years old, a monk for 11 years, built a guillotine near a religious statue portraying the god Indra doing the same thing. He left behind a note stated that chopping his head off was his way of praising Buddha, and he had been planning this for 5 years now. You know, I've always sort of wondered, so you're going to What happens in the morning when you wake up, get out of bed, and be like, you know what? Today's the day I'm going to decapitate myself. Like, you know, I'm going to cut my head off today. Like, isn't that like a weird feeling? You know, when you get up and step over to your guillotine you made? Yeah, I think it's just it's a strange development that happens on a given day.
On his birthday, too.
On his birthday. I mean, there's some...
There's other birthday, you know, rituals for good luck.
Cake.
Yeah, smack him on the ass like 68 times or something. Blow out 68 candles.
Or you
like,
make a wish.
Make a wish. Yeah. You got all kinds of things for good luck on your birthday. Decapitation is the last resort.
Yeah, I think this monk took it to an extreme. Like, he wanted to be different, and it was a little bit too different. Like, he's decapitated. He has no head, you know, which is never a good thing. All right, so Massachusetts tops the list of America's snobbiest states. So the Massachusetts, number one snobbiest state in America. Number two was Vermont.
There were
five New England states in the top six.
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty full of ourselves up here in the Northeast.
We are. I really thought New York would probably be a little snobbier. I don't know.
They're more of a melting pot than we are.
Yeah, true. True. I think, Massachusetts, I don't know if I consider Massachusetts snobby more than a little arrogant.
I was going to say.
I guess it's the same fucking thing.
Yeah, right? I mean, it is, yeah. I mean, elitist.
Yes, right. Elitist.
We're all that. We have a lot of colleges and universities in Massachusetts, so I feel like we think we're a little bit smarter than everybody. A little bit smarter, a little bit better than you, which, you know, is true. But
I was really surprised that Maine came in ninth. I don't know. I don't consider Maine snobby. I consider Maine, you know, a little bit rural, a little bit old-fashioned at times, or sometimes behind the times, but not snobby. I wouldn't consider Maine snobby. But Rhode Island was six. New Hampshire was five. Connecticut was three. Not sure who four was. Just gave me the...
California?
Connecticut. New England ones. California... Yeah, well, we think they would be snobby. Yeah, right?
It's always like, the weather's so nice in L.A.
Right, they get a little, if it's Beverly Hills.
A little like, you know, a little full of themselves because of the, you know, how nice it is there. Yeah. Everybody should move there. Everything's nice there. Live here. Everything's great.
Yeah, everything's great.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's true. I have this feeling when I skip work, I'm always feeling sort of guilty. Not skip work.
Oh, I thought
you
were going
to
say.
If you call in sick or whatever. Oh, you're really not that sick. You just need a mental health day.
Yeah.
And you call in. Mm-hmm. I always feel like this guilt, a little bit of a guilt to do it.
I thought you were going
to
say joy.
Well, there's some joy, but there's some guilt with it too. And I always sort of feel this way. Well, this Italian employee was accused of skipping work for 15 years. So I'm not quite sure. He was a hospital employee, and he skipped work for 15 years.
I mean, I'm actually with you on that. I do, like, if I miss work, like, I do feel a little good because I work in a small place too. So it's like, if you miss, like, you're kind of letting down like the few other people that work there, and
you always wonder, like, is it going to be a mark against me?
Right.
Like, you know, like, are they difficult? How are they going to receive me the next day when I come in? Like, I don't know. You just kind of have this feeling.
Well, let me ask you this question. How long ago did we work at UPS?
We worked there in 1996, I want to say. So that's 25 years ago.
Did you ever officially quit from there?
I did not. So I am still
you're missing work.
I never told anybody.
No, you've been missing work now going on 26 years.
Yeah, I am. They've stopped paying me.
Yeah,
But I have. So now if I went to work again, would I have to like pay all the back dues?
I think you would be. Yeah, you would be in trouble.
I would be in trouble. Yeah, trouble.
Yeah.
Okay.
They probably would. You would probably just get thrown right in jail.
Okay. So here's my solution. I'm not going to go back there, and I'm not going to work in that type of
environment
again. Oh my God, that was the worst.
It was the worst job I've ever had.
Worst job I've ever had, and not only the job itself, which sucked, but the people. I mean, there were like fights. The environment was so bad there.
It's because everybody was miserable.
They were.
It was hundreds of degrees.
Yeah.
It felt like the surface temperature of the sun in that building and in those trailers.
Right.
So it was hotter than you could possibly imagine. And everybody was being pressured to go as fast as they could to get the boxes out of the trailers and onto the belts to be sorted and shipped along. So you were getting pressured and you were only there for a little bit of time and you got like 1 5-minute break where you could hopefully go to the bathroom and slam down 2 Gatorades so you didn't pass out and die in the back of a semi-trailer.
You burnt your fingertips off.
I did burn all my fingertips off, yes. Yeah,
you can commit a crime right
now. I can commit crimes and no one would know because my fingertips are on the Amazon boxes on the top of a semi-trailer in wherever the hell we were. Where was that?
Chelmsford.
Chelmsford, yes.
Yeah. So this man was alleged to have stopped turning up to work in the Chaccio Hospital in the southern city of Catanzaro. In 2005, he's now being investigated for fraud, extortion, and abuse of office. Not sure why he would, how he would not, someone wouldn't pick up on the fact he had.
How do
you
make
it
this long?
It's just one of those no-show jobs, like in The Sopranos, like one of those
maybe
no-show jobs.
I don't know. Maybe he's like a janitor, and he just wanders around or something, and people are supposed to like find him. People see him. He could just walk in there for like 3 minutes a day. You know, with a mop in his hand and be like, hey, Joe,
the back door. Yeah.
Hey, you know, hey, Guido, what's going on?
And then no one pays attention.
Yeah.
And then
somebody's like, oh, yeah, I saw Guido yesterday.
Yeah, he was here.
He was here.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. See him all the time. So a man returns to his home, a $6 million home, mind you, to find that someone had borrowed it to get married. Friends and family of Shanita Jones and Courtney Wilson were thrilled when they were invited to their dream home to watch them get married. Guests were invited to spend the weekend at the $5.7 million estate with 7.2 acres in Southwest Ranches, Florida. The couple even called it the Wilson's Estate on invitations, but there was just one tiny snag. The home wasn't theirs. They hadn't even hired it. And the real owner knew nothing about their plan until he showed up on the Saturday morning when they were meant to tie the knot. A stunned Nathan Finkel called 911 and said there were people trespassing at his property. He said they were harassing him and telling him it was God's message that they should get married at his home. Mr. Finkel added, I don't know what's going on. All they want is for it to stop. And they're sitting at my property right at the front of the gate right now. So Mr. Wilson allegedly posed as a prospective buyer and visited the home multiple times several months before the ceremony. So they scoped it out. And the 9-bedroom home was first listed for $7.25 million in 2019, but has since come down in price. It comes complete with a grand ballroom, 2-story bar, movie theater, bowling alley, tennis court, dance studio. So they go, this couple just enters the home and is going to get married there. One problem, the owner comes home the day of the wedding and says, get out of my house.
Yeah, you can't borrow a home.
You can't do that.
No, you can't borrow a home. That's living in someone else's house. That's Eddie Murphy in Beverly Hills Cop.
It is. Yeah, just living in the home.
Yeah. Just like, I'm just going to live in your house.
Yeah. Here I am.
Here I am. Here we are.
You know what they should, you know what Nathan Finkel should build? He should build the wall that Trump built.
Mm-hmm.
There was one problem with Trump's wall, though. People are climbing over the $15 billion border wall with $5 ladders. So they're buying ladders at like Home Depot.
Yeah.
And climbing over the wall.
Well, I mean, those are high quality ladders.
Yeah, there's those stretchy ones.
Yeah, they got those ones that, they're, you know, adjustable size and stuff.
Yeah. And they
some of them have grips on the on the rungs.
There's some fancy ladders out there.
There is. There's ones you can bend into almost like a monkey bars, you know, like it's straight and then you can create like a 45 degree angle and then it goes parallel to the ground and then you create another 45. So then you got like a bridge.
Do you really?
Yeah, boom. There it is.
Bridge it. Yeah. Wow. You
walk right over the top.
Yeah, I wasn't very good at geometry or anything like that, so I don't know if I'd figure that out, but it took me everything inside me just to take my dad's ladder and put one of those, one of those bar things across it or whatever. It took forever to figure that out. But he wanted one of those, the thing you put up against it so it doesn't move. Well, you put that thing on it so that it's, it makes it sturdy.
Yeah, I don't have any idea what you're talking about.
And I didn't have any idea where it was either as I was trying to put it together.
Yeah. I have a ladder that I use to clear out my gutters, and my house
is like Clark Griswold?
Taller than it used to be. I've never fallen off my ladder.
Okay.
Because I would probably break my legs. It's not the sturdiest thing up there.
No, it's not great with
it. You know, it shakes around a little bit.
Yeah.
And there was a few times in the winter where I was like, you know, there was some... like some ice in the gutters and stuff. Yeah. And I'm like, people are like, oh, you know, climb up on your roof. And I'm like, I get to the top of my ladder. I could never bring myself to actually get on top of my roof because it has a pretty good slant to it.
Yeah.
So I'm like, if I do that, I am falling off.
And yeah, I'm
like,
not that
I don't care. I don't care enough about the ice in my gutters and the ice dams than to break my neck falling off my
house. The way I look at it, the climate is going to change again and the ice is going to melt.
Yeah.
So eventually, you're okay. But the problem, I always marvel at those guys or girls who can just run up and down the ladder or get up on a roof and just walk around it like it's like they're walking in their home.
Yeah.
Like it's just crazy. Like I just like a fearlessness. I am so afraid of, I just don't like to be. I'm so afraid of hurting myself.
If I was strapped in, like I could do it. Like if I knew I wasn't gonna fall and hurt myself, I could go up there and do it.
Yeah.
But I need to be sure I'm not gonna fall down.
Right.
Like those people that work at the construction sites, like the skyscrapers and stuff.
Right.
And are up on the steel
window
beams.
Washers. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're just walking along the steel beams with like nothing.
No.
And it's like you fall hundreds and hundreds of feet to your death.
No.
I don't.
You need to harness me.
Yeah.
Like you need to put the straps up in my crotch area and all that whole thing.
Yes.
Yeah. You need to strap
strap me in. Strap me up.
Right. If I fall off that thing, it needs to be like I've parachuted myself down and I've just like a feather.
Yeah.
Like just sort of
gently
landed on my face on the pavement. Yeah. And that's what I want. All right. So that's the news presented by Lobs Brewing. We will come back with John Butchergross from ESPN, and Connor Ryan from the Boston Sports Journal. It's coming up right after this timeout. Our guest this week is from ESPN. John Butchergross joins us. Butchy, thanks for joining us.
You know who we mean.
Yeah, we know. Thanks for doing this. We appreciate it.
You bet. No problem, boys.
You know, you just did play-by-play for the Frozen Four. UMass wins it. Just want to know your thoughts on UMass's run and the Frozen Four itself. It was a different sort of year. Some teams had to be eliminated due to COVID and so forth. BC was out early, and UMass makes that run. So I just wanted to know your thoughts on it.
Yeah, it was a weird year, but when I put the headset on and the puck dropped, it felt like a normal game. And it really did. The competitiveness of the athletes in every sport, you know, college and pro, really showed through. It shows how these men and women are wired, and it doesn't really matter if it's a beer league crowd of, you know, 20 people, family and friends, or if it's, you know, about 25% like we had in Pittsburgh, about 5,000. It's really the same for them. Obviously, sold out places add that extra gear, playoff noise and playoff urgency, another gear. So we certainly missed that. But overall, it felt normal at the end. And to have a new team like UMass come from nowhere to give the rest of the college hockey world hope that you can win 3 games in a season and win a national championship. Mm. 3 to 5 years later, it's possible.
Right. Now, we know you're a big college hockey guy, and I just want to know your thoughts on the state of college hockey right now. It seems to be a great product, and obviously in New England, it's huge, and it's good to see a team like UMass really turn the program around and be another factor.
Yeah, absolutely. Parity is here to stay in college hockey. There's too many players and too many good coaches and not enough teams. And so every team's going to have a chance to find, you know, let's face it, you only need 10 to 12 really good players. Mm-hmm. The rest of the guys can be fillers here or there. And you can find these players all over the world, North America, Canada, more Canadian kids are realizing the college life is better than the junior life. It's better for training. It's better for working out. It's better for meeting girls. It's better for social
right.
life.
Right.
It's better for getting halfway to a degree. They sign those deals in junior. Well, we'll pay for college if you go back. You know, so few do. Mm. It's hard to do that. So I think they realize it's the best. You know, it's a great way to go for a year, sometimes two, and then you go. Maybe I'll go one more. I'm getting close to graduating. You know, some are one and done. Some are two and done. Like we saw Zach Jones of a UMass and playing for the Rangers now. But it's a great product. It's growing. We're adding teams, which is good. The Big Ten, I think, really woke a lot of people up from a television standpoint. Obviously, that league was started a lot because of the television network the Big Ten Network, which is hugely profitable and fills the pockets of Big Ten schools big time. And so once they stepped up and they started showing these games in high definition, and people don't realize, not long ago, you couldn't find a college hockey game in high definition, on TV. So they really pushed everybody to go forward, and hopefully more and more, you know, like I said, only continue to grow.
Since you've been at ESPN, you've always been a big proponent of hockey. Hockey is now returning, pro hockey, returning to ESPN. Yeah. How excited are you that hockey is back? And will NHL tonight make a triumphant return?
I don't care. Hockey's back. You know? Right. It's all about the MLS with me.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was like Christmas morning. I knew it would cause a ripple. We kind of had an idea this was going to happen about a year or two ago. We thought that it would be the ultimate deal. And then about a month before, I heard it was pretty much all done. But still, you're just not sure until that baby is born. You're not really that excited. It's like a whole different gear when that baby is born and you're a dad.
Yeah.
Right. And so the day it was announced, it was like so cool. And I knew it would cause ripples with players and with the fans. I knew there would be some sort of nostalgia involved because ESPN has reached its nostalgia stage now.
Yeah.
It's kind of part of the whole life of the network. There's now nostalgia involved. It started off as that cool. Well, first it started as a moon landing. Like, what is this? 24 hours of sports.
Right.
And then it became like a Barstool thing where it was really cool. Then it became a rocket ship of huge, you know, Sunday night football. We have baseball. Then we got the NBA and all kinds of stuff. And then it did become this colossal giant. And then you start getting, of course, arrows thrown out your way too, which is part of the deal. And I think the suits probably realized it would be a good thing, but I don't think they had any idea the amount of social goodwill that they found on that day when it was announced. And the way Twitter responded, you know, the way social media responded, they were so pumped. And so I think it really energized the whole building. Again, I knew it would cause a surprise. Even I was surprised it was that much. And I guarantee the suits had no idea that they were going to get that kind of goodwill because they're not used to that.
Sure. That's 10, 15 years. That's very true. So we're big Bruins fans and, you know, they acquire Taylor Hall. And we were surprised because we thought after an offseason that was sort of uneventful, we didn't know if they'd make the big get. So what were your thoughts on the Bruins acquiring Hall, and does this make them a cup contender now?
Yeah, right away. And I said it on Twitter, and I said it on Scott Van Pelt's show. I went on the night of the trade deadline, and he had me on to talk about it. And I said that it was a great move by the Bruins. The Bruins fans will notice right away he's a real hockey player. He's a good hockey player. He's played on crappy teams that have rebuilt. Again, it doesn't, you know, totally get him off the hook, but he's played on bad teams that are either rebuilding or rebuilding quickly. I mean, the Oilers and the Devils and the Sabres, could you pick three worse teams, you know, pre-McDavid that you could really be on? And so I knew right away he would look like a real hockey player and do real hockey player things. They didn't give up anything to get him really at all. So it made it easy for Don Sweeney to make the trade. There's no way you wouldn't make that trade 100 times, right. Even if you felt like it was a bit of a gamble. So I don't know if it makes them a cup contender. They're really good. I just worry about overall, they are an older team. You know, will Krejci perform the way in the playoffs like he usually does? They're going to have to be carried by Pastrnak and Marchand. They're two of the best players in the NHL, two future Hall of Famers in my mind. Their numbers will be retired in the rafters if Pastrnak signs one more deal. Just amazing players, but we just haven't seen enough layers of offense yet from them and the injuries on defense to really know. But they're certainly in the mix.
So who do you have in the finals and or winning the cup?
Yeah, I just think Tampa is so strong. If Stamkos comes back like they think, if Kucherov comes back like they think, and then you have Hedman, who should win the Norris, and Vasilevskiy, who should win the Vezina. That team is stacked. I think it's their time to possibly repeat. We know it's hard to do that, but I think they can. I think in the West, they're going to see Colorado or Vegas. Vegas, Tampa was my preseason prediction. Colorado is, you know, a lot of people don't notice, but they're just annihilating teams the last couple of months. They are absolutely loaded. Again, the question for them is goaltending. And Vegas, again, they're also loaded with experienced goaltending and Marc-Andre Fleury and Robert Leonard. So I really do think they're a big threat as well. Toronto is certainly in the mix. I think they've done everything they can. Their goaltending has been brutal the last 6 weeks, one of the worst save percentages in the NHL. But you have Matthews and Marner and Tavares and Foligno. They're built right now to win. If the defense has depth, doesn't have injuries, and they get really good. Again, as you know, you don't win in the playoffs with good goaltending. You win with great goaltending.
Right, yeah.
So you've got to have great goaltending to win. With them, you're just not sure. The Bruins have a real good chance to get great goaltending. The Vegas has a real good chance. Tampa's a lock to get great goaltending. That's why I think they're the ultimate favorite. Doesn't mean they'll win, but they're almost assuredly going to get great goaltending. Washington, they got a cup team, but are they going to get great goaltending for 2 months? You know, I don't know. So that's why I like Tampa.
Now, we've been fans of the Butchie Overtime Challenge for years and years. And are you surprised at the popularity of it? And you've obviously donated a ton of money to charities over the time. And the popularity is just incredible.
It's shocking. Yeah. I mean, when it first happened, it was just a goof. I couldn't believe it was even happening. And then it really took off. And I'm selling, $20,000 worth of merchandise in the month of December, the first Christmas. These people are sending money in the mail. What's going on here? And I always say, I wish I said I wasn't going to give it away because I could have paid off my mortgage by now.
Sure.
But yeah, we've given away like $250,000, which is unbelievable.
Incredible.
From some silly Twitter game. I thought it would fizzle by now, but it actually still has some legs. And if I can ever kind of throw my saddle on this whole legalized gambling thing that is happening, maybe you play for 99 cents, right?
Sure.
You can raise a crap load of money, give even more to charity, give some to me.
Right. Sure. Right. Hey.
Yeah. And then
that's America. Everybody wins. Yeah. That's America. I mean, we've both bought some stuff.
Yeah. I have some ball markers and I have some hats.
Ball markers and t-shirts.
All sorts of stuff. Well,
and so how do you decide, what charities to give the money to?
I'm a spontaneous, on a whim guy, very much so. So it's not much of a plan. It was always hockey related, someone associated with hockey. I think if a former player started, or a current player, or any player started some sort of, foundation for cancer research. So obviously, cancer research doesn't have anything to do with hockey, but the person involved has something to do with hockey.
Right.
If a local team wants to redo their locker room, that's cool. One time I was on Twitter, and it was the RPI women wanted a third jersey, and they started a GoFundMe, and it was $2,000. I'm like, I got it. I'll pay for that. I happened to scroll that day and see it.
Right.
And then I just did one recently. I'm drawing a blank where it's the same thing where I just kind of saw it. It's like, I'll do that. I paid for a kid's tuition once at Xavier to play club hockey. I met his dad in a bar in Ohio. And I had this idea in my mind about I want to pay for a kid's tuition.
Right.
It's club hockey.
Yeah.
Because one of my hashtags hockey is college hockey.
Right. Yeah.
And I was talking to this guy. He's a mailman. His wife was a mailman. I said, and it's like, this is the guy. I was just thinking about it.
Yeah.
Just started thinking about it. And here I am in Ohio at his dive bar in Ohio and talking to this guy. He's a mailman. His kids play club hockey at Xavier, which is not cheap.
Yeah.
And and so I pay for a kid's semester. So I'm very spontaneous. That's why I'm so surprised any of this even works or still functioning, because I don't have that kind of organized business brain. It's just, to me, life is fun. Hockey is fun. I hang around hockey people because they're fun to be around. As you guys know, they're the most fun athletes to be around. Just so much fun and passionate and silly and hysterical and tough.
Right.
The whole thing. They're an adjective crockpot.
Right.
And that's why I like hockey players.
Oh, that's great.
Awesome.
So we do this segment called Five Questions with Two Assholes, and we're just going to ask five random questions. Yeah, we had Chris Nyland on a couple weeks ago. He wanted to be the third asshole, but hey, that's okay. If you don't want to, that's fine.
Love nails.
Oh, he was great. All right, so here we go. All right, so first question. What is your favorite golf course that you've played?
Well, I usually, my default answer is usually Pebble Beach. Overall, the 18 holes might not be the best course in the world, but that stretch when you get to about the fourth hole and then you play through 11, then it gets kind of boring. Then you come back 17, 18. It's just amazing. The ocean, the mountains. I was first off the day I played there in 2006, I think. First group off, 70 degrees, no wind. And it was the terrific beauty out there, and the vibe is unbelievable.
Oh, that's terrific.
Question number two, what is your favorite musical artist or group right now?
Right now, man, I made the best 80s mix. I wouldn't say mixtape, it's mix on my phone, whatever you call it. I'm not sure how to call that.
Playlist.
Playlist. There I am. But yeah, so I made an awesome 80s playlist, and I have yet to get, I listen to it every day when I'm in the gym, I'm in the car, I'm all over it. So it's really right now the decade of the 80s and that kind of music, Psychedelic Furs, Ghost in Me, U2, Red Hill Mining Town, REM, I Believe, which I played when I was a young reporter in Cape Cod driving to work on Cape 11 News. I'd play REM's I Believe, so I'm going to get DSP in one day.
Nice.
So right now it's 80s playlist. That's my favorite artist.
Awesome.
Okay, so number three, if you could have any superpower, what would it be?
Wow, that's a good one. I want big calves. Terrible calves.
It's powerful.
Terrible calves, and it's just I feel self-conscious when I wear shorts, when I go golfing. I'm so excited when I meet someone with worse calves. Right. That always makes my day. So, yeah, I'd like to have calves like Ray Ferraro. Nice. He's got two shot puts in there.
Nice.
Calf man.
Superpower. Yeah, I want nice. Calves.
Awesome. Nice. What is your favorite Sports Center moment? Question number four.
That's a great one. That's an awesome question. I've interviewed some cool people, The Rock, Vince Vaughn.
Nice.
You know, I was on when the Red Sox won the World Series in 04. I did the first Sports Center after that, which was really cool.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. A great one.
So being a big Sox fan in that moment was really, I called my son at home, who was 11 at the time, and we listened to the last out together because I was at work. He was home. But you know what a cool moment was? I was on the Sports Center set, but I did Hockey Night in Canada. I had a segment back in the day called Satellite Hot Stove during the second intermission on CBC, and we get the Canadian feed, and just how they treat hockey on Saturday nights there. Is like how we do college game day here on Saturdays. It's just amazing television back then. And they actually had me on as a guest. That's when I first got going NHL Tonight. You know, they're used to hockey highlights being like church in Canada. Mm. So a lot of people up there would get illegal cable to watch NHL Tonight because we had such fun.
Yeah.
We didn't treat the sport like a religion. We treated it like a bar fight. Like, you know, again, being in a dive bar. And they love that. I think Ron McLean, the host, kind of liked that. So he had me on as this new fresh voice of hockey highlights. And I was just, I revered the show so much and how they cover hockey. That was a huge deal to me.
Number five, who do you think the Patriots quarterback should be this year?
We're asking everybody this.
We asked everybody.
I like it. I don't think they're going to draft a quarterback in the first round.
Yeah, I don't either.
I'm shocked if they will. If someone could fall there, I think they're going to stay where they are. And I think it's going to be Cam Newton. I do. Newton's going to be the starting quarterback.
Now you mentioned Ray Ferraro. Where's the best place to get chicken parm? We're big chicken parm guys.
Yeah. Well, my kitchen is the best place to get
chicken
parm.
Is that right? Okay.
I make phenomenal chicken parm. But, you know, the Federal Hill in Providence is phenomenal. Oh. There's a couple spots up there that are sensational. Actually, the North End. I went to a great place in the North End. I took a picture of the place. So it's a couple doors down from Ray Bork's place there in the North End. Yeah. And I forget the name. It's a very Italian name. That was delicious out on the sidewalk this summer. Yeah. So it's hard to mess up chicken parm.
It is.
So if you do, you're really, really a bet. You're an absolute duster if you can't. Because like I said, I make awesome chicken parm. It's just not hard. It's cheese, it's sauce, it's breadcrumbs. It's a good piece of chicken.
So the secret to your chicken parm, do you double bread the chicken? Do you make your own sauce? What are we talking about here?
It's just care and precision. I like the Paul Newman marinara. Ooh, although one time I did cook it, I saw a different way where you kind of cook it in a pan first and then you bread it and then put it in the oven. Like you fry it for a second. It was a different way to do it and it was unbelievable. I'm not sure what it did. It kind of made it crusty first and then you cooked it. And it was a little separate step. So I'll have to DM you that one.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'd love to check that out. Really? But you really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
Hockey's been a big part of my life. Like I said, my first job was Cape Cod. My first boss in the business was Martha Cusick, which was Fred Cusick's daughter. Hall of Fame voice of the Bruins. Yes. So
love Fred Cusick.
Every step of the way, hockey has been there. And then I went to Providence for 2 years. That's where I saw my first Frozen Four. I'd never seen a Frozen Four. Right. That was another flavor of hockey came into my life and covered college hockey there. And then, of course, NHL Tonight. And now Frozen Four, voice of the Frozen Four, and now NHL to come back as I kind of wrap this up in the third period of my career. I've been so lucky, and hockey's been there every step of the way.
And we were sad to see Johnny Pearson go because he was a big part of our childhood.
He was ahead of his time, man.
He was.
Wasn't he? He was. And I sit on YouTube sometimes, just listen to Fred and Johnny Pearson. I just watch old clips.
I love when they call that North Star Bruins Brawl.
John Wensink. Thank you, brother.
You bet.
Thanks again to John Butchergrass. It was awesome to have Butchie on. We're big fans of Butchie, have been for a long time. We do the Butchie Overtime Challenge religiously. We love him on ESPN SportsCenter. He does a great job play-by-play in the Frozen Four.
We're looking forward to the NHL getting back onto ESPN. He's going to probably have a lot to do with the coverage.
Really phenomenal. And I really hope they bring back the NHL Tonight or something like it.
Great show.
That was a great show. Absolutely. So thanks again to John Butchergrass. And we now will talk with Connor Ryan for the Boston Sports Journal. We'll talk some Bruins. Here's Connor.
We are pleased to have from the Boston Sports Journal, Connor Ryan back with us. Connor, nice to have you again, bud.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me.
Sure. No problem at all. So the Bruins, big changes here in the last couple of weeks. Trade deadline comes. I'll be honest, I didn't have a lot of confidence that anything would be really done of that, you know, of any substance. But, you know, Don Sweeney went out and got, you know, one of the better players out there available in Taylor Hall and also Mike Riley and Curtis Lazar. So he really made a push you know, to try to become a cup contender and make one last, you know, go of it with this group. But were you surprised that that came together and they were able to get a guy like Hall?
I think I was probably most surprised with just what the return was, right? I think most people were expecting that at the very least that it was going to be one of those situations where I think worst case scenario, right, it was going to be kind of like when the Bruins got like Lee Stepniak and you were adding like this marginal guy that is really going to like tilt, you know, the scales. You're kind of stuck in that crossroads a little bit. So I think people were at the bare minimum expecting that. The fact that you go and you address three key areas of need where you get a legitimate top six guy in Taylor Hall, you get a puck moving defenseman who you kind of look at Mike Riley's numbers, both, you know, just the eye test and just some of his analytics. You wonder how they got him for a third round pick. And you look at Curtis Lazar, who I think has been fantastic in terms of really revitalizing that fourth line that's really kind of struggled for most of the year. So I think the fact that the Bruins are able to get those three guys to fill key areas of need without giving up all that much, like, you know, a good for Anders Bjork, I think hopefully he should thrive with heavier minutes in Buffalo. But it's not like, you know, we're in a situation where, you know, let's look back when the Bruins were rumored to get a guy like Matthias Ekholm and people thought you had to give up a first and Jake DeBrusk and a few of these other guys. You know, even if, let's say, Taylor Hall and Mike Riley and those guys didn't pan out, at the end of the day, what you gave up Bjork and a few, you know, a second or third round pick. It's not like moves that are going to tank the franchise in the years ahead if they didn't work out. And so far, they're working out. So I don't know how you can really kind of view it as being a situation where it really hurts the Bruins both this year and in the years ahead.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I was killing Sweeney before, you know, with the holes that he had left, you know, before in the offseason, before the season started and so forth. But, you know, you got to give him credit for what he did at the deadline. Following up on Hall, he said that, you know, he would want to spend maybe the next few years here. You know, what do you think about the Bruins possibly signing him to a longer term deal and maybe Mike Riley also?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting situation. It's something that works out for the Bruins as well, because I think one thing that people have to be cognizant about with anyone the Bruins were to pick up during this season, like a guy like Ekholm who has a term, you have to be aware that the Seattle expansion draft is right around the corner. So if you had guys who, let's say you get a guy like Ekholm who has a year on his contract, all of a sudden you're looking at a situation where, great, you got a top 4D, but now what? Do you have to expose Matt Grizzly? You're going to lose him for nothing? You know. So I think probably the Bruins' strategy going into this offseason is probably let guys like Hall and Riley get to free agency. Again, it could be one of those wink, wink, you know, nod, nods of like, all right, we have the term, we have the parameters set up. We won't sign you until right after the expansion draft. But so I think you're going to see a lot of that tampering, I guess, if you want to call it that, just right, to kind of circumvent some of those rules of Seattle. But I think the Bruins would definitely be interested. I think especially a guy like Riley makes a lot of sense as a guy that fits an area of need. They you know, they really like a guy like Matt Grizzly, but to have another guy in Riley who can drive the offense on another pairing, I think is huge. It allows them to keep McAvoy and Grizzly together, which I think is what Bruce Cassidy wants to do. And then for Hall, I think it's Don Sweeney kind of alluded to it in his trade deadline presser. It's all, I think, going to hinge on what the fit is and how the production is, because, you know, even though I think maybe Hall has stood out a little bit in terms of maybe some of the finer details of his game, like his back checking's been good, he's going to be judged on how many goals he scores, how much offense he drives on that second line, right? So far, it's been pretty good. So if he continues to be a guy that, again, I don't think anyone's expecting him to be New Jersey Devils hot trophy level Taylor Hall, right? But if he's just a guy that can you know, generate offense, be a reliable top six winger, which David Krejci has not had in a long, long time, I think there's a fit there. And Taylor Hall kind of talked about that, he's wherever he's been the guy, right? Where he's expected to be the number one, number two guy, whether it's on that rebuilding Oilers team or with Arizona, Jersey, Buffalo, which, I mean, God help that franchise. To be in a situation where he is now, where he has to be the fifth, the sixth best player, it seems like it's a great fit for both sides. Again, we'll see what happens. You know, Taylor Hall could all of a sudden go on a tear. They go on a deep playoff run, and all of a sudden he thinks he can make $8 million on the market again. Maybe he reevaluates, but if he wants to come here and stay here for a couple of years and be that second line guy, that, you know, supporting cast more or less player, the fit is definitely there. It just depends on, I think, what him and his agent want.
You know, you mentioned Riley in the defense, and that's been a concern, not only because of the injuries, but also because of the youth of some of those guys. And you can see with Riley how smooth he is, how he transitions the puck, passes the puck well. It's just a big difference between him and the younger guys. With the addition of him, you know, is the defense good enough? You know, let's say Brandon Carlo can come back, be healthy, finish out the year. Is the defense good enough to go on a cup run?
Yeah, that's, I think, maybe the biggest. I think you look at kind of the two main questions left with this team, where I think you have to be encouraged by how good the top six is. But I think it's going to hinge on how that defense looks and how that third line looks by the time the playoffs get around. And for the defense, I think a lot of it's going to hinge on health, right? I mean, we saw how impactful a guy like Brandon Carlo could be when he's healthy and effective. I mean, I think you could make the argument he was probably their best defenseman during that cup run in 2019. So just having him back is a huge difference maker. And even a guy like Kevin Miller, who I think if he's your third pairing defenseman, that's a pretty good deal for what it is. And I think, you know, people can talk about Kevin Miller and, oh, you know, the analytics don't look good for the guy, or, you know, he's a liability. There's, I think, some things you have to look at for a guy like Kevin Miller where you just have to throw the numbers out the window, because you talk to any of those players about Kevin Miller, those guys friggin' get up when Kevin Miller plays. Like, I don't know what it is about that impact, but it has a tangible effect on this team. So if you roll out a defense in the playoffs where you keep McAvoy and Grizzly together, you have Riley with Kala, where you got kind of that that mix that you had with Krug and Kala, where you've got a great stay-at-home, shut-down defenseman with a puck-moving guy, and your third D pairing is Lozon Miller, two kind of stay-at-home guys, it's pretty good. Again, it's not maybe... If you showed probably a Bruins fan from like 2010, 2011 at D-Corps, they'd probably be like, what, these little guys, right? But that's kind of the way the defense has evolved a little bit. And I think that's kind of what Bruce Cassidy wants, is kind of that mix of guys that can be shut down physical guys like Miller, Kahlo, with some of those puck moving skill guys like Grizzly, Riley. And it's an interesting mix, but I think it's one of those situations where if you put so many of those puck moving guys together and they're effective, you don't really have to worry about it too much if you're spending most of your time down the other end of the ice, right? So I think That's kind of what they're hoping for. It's all going to hinge on health, though, because Brandon Carlo could be a situation where he might not be back until 2-3 games for the playoffs based on kind of his week-to-week status. So, again, all going to come down to health with those guys.
Yeah, so speaking of Kevin Miller, there's been a little bit of chatter the last few days here, and especially on Twitter, some beefs going back and forth about the seventh player award. So where do you fall on, you know, is he the top candidate in your mind, or who do you think should win the seventh player award?
Yeah, drama on Twitter. It's crazy. It happens, right?
Yeah, right.
I mean, I definitely think he'd be in the running just in terms of, I mean, I think it's as much as you want to say maybe he's injury prone. We have to, I think, have the lens of like, it's just silly that this guy's even playing. Like, it's absurd. Yeah. Like when he signed that contract, I think most people are in the same boat of, give him the contract. It's not a lot of money. See what he is. Like, I don't think he even comes back. And I mean, when he's out there, he's been effective as a third pairing guy. That being said, you have to look at a few other guys who also have made really compelling cases. I mean, Nick Ritchie's cooled off quite a bit, but I think he's been a pleasant surprise because I think he was in that same boat of, I don't think anyone really knew what to expect from Nick Ritchie after, especially in that playoffs last year, which, you know, was a bit of a disaster for him, especially in that Lightning series. So, I think he's definitely a candidate. I think when he's on and when he's engaged, he's definitely very noticeable out there. And then the one that's interesting that I'm curious to see how it kind of plans out, because I don't think he's even up for the voting, I want to say, but Craig Smith is a guy who I think has probably been maybe not the biggest surprise, because like he's had that profile as being, you know, a 20-goal, 50-point guy, which is what his pace is right now. But he's a guy that I think has exceeded expectations in terms of being a viable other second line guy, right? Like as much as people, I think, want to talk about how good Taylor Hall has been, how much he's elevated that second line, Craig Smith and the run he's been on has played just as key a role in getting Krejci going. So I think he's a candidate, but I want to say he's not up for the vote. Maybe it's, you know, only limiting it to like bottom six guys or guys on the defense. I think Nesson has learned its lesson, considering there's been multiple years where it's been like, Brad Marchand,
right. Pastrnak, Bork, Neely,
they've at least gotten a little bit better with it the last couple of years, like Wagner won, Boyle last year. So I think people have started to wisen up, even though those were also two mass guys. So maybe they just like, that's why a lot of fans voted for them. Yeah. But it seemed like they've spun up. But you've got a lot of good candidates. I mean, you've kind of had to rely on these guys based on how many guys have been injured. But even look at Swayman, he won't win because of the sample size, but if we want to look, you know, a few months from now, let's say the Bruins go on a very promising playoff run, how crucial is Swayman in terms of stabilizing this team? And they very much could have gone off the rails ahead of the deadline, right? He was getting them valuable points during this time where they were rolling out an AHL-level defense. So multiple guys in the running. I would not be surprised if Kevin Miller's right there, as much as I'm sure that's going to inflame some some takes on Twitter. But you've got quite a few guys that I think are all in the running for it.
You know, it's a great segue, because I was just about to talk about Jeremy Swayman and how it's an interesting case now with Tuukka Rask and obviously Halak, also UFAs at the end of the year. You know, the emergence of Swayman, now as you get toward the end of the year and you wonder what Rask's future is, do they bring Rask back in a year or two and then have Swayman in there as well? Or do they maybe say to Rask, you know, take it or leave it, this is what we have for you, or maybe potentially move on? I mean, that's going to create an interesting dynamic, I think, in the offseason for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be a fascinating kind of offseason storyline, because the franchise can go in a couple of drastically different directions based on what they end up doing, right? Because there's the argument you could make that Swayman's great and you want to roll with the hot hand and he's the goaltender of the future. And if he doesn't miss a step and keeps on getting better and better, what do you know? You've one, saved a whole bunch of money on the cap, and you've got your young goaltender of the future. You could also have the situation where kind of Philly's in right now, where I think everyone thought Carter Hart was going to be the next guy, and he's taken a step back, and kind of that whole team has taken a big step back as well. So my hunch of what happens is I think they work with Rask on a short-term deal. I think he's said multiple times that he only wants to play in Boston. You know, he's knocked back any trade rumors. I think even if it's 2 years, 3 years at less average annual value, I think considering, you know, Rask, I think, is, you know, speaking with him, he's very pragmatic of how he approaches situations. He's very realistic on expectations and, you know, weighing situations like, all right, I only want to be in Boston. I have a few more years left. It makes sense. You know, you're willing to concede some of those things. So, and if that's how it maps out, and let's say it's Rask next year and Swayman or Vladar is the backup, and it could be Vladar at the start and Swayman plays great in Providence and they push him up, I think that's kind of the best of both worlds for the Bruins, right? Because you kind of look at it like the Bruins were in 2010, 2011, like Tuukka Rask, 2010, fantastic at 22, takes a little bit of a step back in 2011. They have the ultimate safety net in Tim Thomas there, and we know how the story ends that season. So not saying that's going to happen that next season, right? But the fact that I think you can go into next year with Rask, who should still project as a number one great goaltender, and if he takes a step back, what do you know? You have this up-and-coming top goalie prospect who's made huge strides in the next year as the next man up. So I think that's how they're going to approach it. But again, a whole lot can change between now and then. It's going to be fascinating to see how that all maps out.
And the other thing is they could also sell it to Rask as, hey, you know, you could split the year with Swayman. You know, you don't have to play 65 games. If you're not, you know, into a big, you know, workload, then, you know, maybe you can come in for two more years and play 45 games and, you know, whatever, you know, so that could help too. All right. So we do this little thing called five questions with two assholes. And Smitty and I ask you five random questions, and we'll get that going right now.
Sounds good. There you go. Very nice.
All right. So so Evan Marinovsky made some mention on Twitter that there was a little bit of a choice between Honeydew Donuts and Dunkin' Donuts. Which guy are you?
Oh, I'm Dunkin' Donuts all the way. I've only had Honeydew Donuts. I've only had Honeydew, I think, once or twice in my life. And both times they have been at the South Station bus depot, which is a dreadfully sad place. So granted, maybe I just have not gone to a better Honeydew Donuts and I've had like a good donut. But every time I've been there, the person there's sad. I'm sad because I'm taking a bus somewhere I don't want to be. Like it all adds up to being just an unfortunate situation. So I'm have to go squarely with Dunkin' Donuts here. But if you guys can recommend a Honeydew that's in a bunch nicer location, maybe I'll assess where I'm at.
Yeah, I'm a Dunkin' guy all the way too. We actually have I'm in Foxborough and we have a Honeydew that's actually I think that closed. So never mind. it is a sad place. Okay, so question number two: what is your favorite reverse retro jersey from around the league?
It is biased, but I do love the Bruins one. Let me see. Off the top of my head, I could be wrong of like what my favorite one is. I think I really like the Kings, just because I love the old Kings purple and gold one. I think any ones like those are great that like bring back one that's like a popular color scheme. So I think that was one that stood out to me. There were some that are just like dog shit that I remember that were like Red Wings one's bad, Toronto's one's not good. I always remember the ones that are really bad because I feel like there were a lot that were like in the pool of like, well, it's pretty good, you know? I'll go with Kings. I think that one was good.
Yeah, I like the Kings. I like the Avalanche one a lot with the
Nordiques.
Yeah, the old school Nordique stuff. Yeah, and but the Red Wings one does. It looks like a practice jersey.
I understand you don't have much to work with, right? The jersey hasn't changed that much of his, but if there's ever time to get weird, like do it now. Especially if the team's not good, like get someone in there to buy more jerseys at this point.
Yeah. Right. That's getting weird. all right, question number three. What was your favorite concert you've been to?
Favorite concert I've been to? That is a good question. I'll have to go. It's very generic 20s, 30s guy who loves, you know, all rock, but I got to go to Fenway twice to see Pearl Jam. And that was like a bucket list thing for me, is finally seeing them live. So to see them there in Fenway, great show. Don't remember that much the first time. I went again the second time. I'm able to see all the remember. All the
there you go.
So that one I think is top. That was one of the ones like the song. You know, you get the set list starts. And you have to just take in like where you're at and like you're finally there. So I think that's my go to.
Yeah, that's a good call. So number four, you and Evan Marinowski have a podcast, correct?
Yes.
You want to give it a little shout out here?
Yeah. So we have Poke the Bear, which I do every Wednesday with Evan, so that will be dropping pretty soon. And then also Evan has his own podcast, which is also Bruins one, so I do that one with him Mondays, and that drops on Tuesdays. So he does Bruins Beat, so Poke the Bear and Bruins Beat, both talk about the Bruins, both a little different, but both the same good old Bruins banter. So we have those out every single week.
Okay, so question number four is, who is the better podcaster, you or Evan?
Ooh. He's gonna listen to this. So.
He is, and we've had him on twice.
I'm gonna take the diplomatic approach. Say we make a great team. I think we differ in terms of movie takes. I already had to ream him out last time because he said he was watching The Da Vinci Code last week, and I was like, why the fuck are you watching this? Like, why are you watching?
That's not a movie you watch again.
No, especially like that came out in 2006. I'm like, if you want to watch a good like crime thriller, like watch like Knives Out or something recently. Like, right. Who's watching a Dan Brown novel made into a crappy film? So I'll drag him for that. I will drag him for none of his podcasts. He's a great. He's got good hosting abilities. He's the one who can control the conversation. I'm the one who just like usually ends up ranting about the Da Vinci Code or what have you.
Well, you know those UMass guys; those aren't city kids. You know,
oh, of course, yeah. those are I can't serve UMass nearly as much now that they won a championship. So.
That's right. That's right.
Running out of ammo.
All right. So, question number five: who do you think should be the Patriots quarterback this coming season?
Ooh, that's a good question. It's like this is like the Tuukka Rask, Jeremy Swayman situation.
Yeah, we're just gonna ask everybody, got people on the street. Who do you think it should be?
I'm gonna say it's gonna be Jimmy Garoppolo, because I think they're gonna. I think 49ers are gonna take Mac Jones, and it's gonna be absolutely foolish to have Jimmy G as like kind of this guy in waiting when you traded up, you traded so many first round picks to get a guy at number three. Who? What are you gonna redshirt him? What happens the first game where Jimmy G throws like two picks in a game, and you got the number three pick sitting there? So I don't buy it for a second that 49ers are sticking on with keeping both those guys for this year. So I'm gonna go with a predictable storyline. But I'll go with Jimmy G because I think it makes too much sense to have him at the very least not be with 49ers next year.
Right. And the money. I mean, what is it, $25 million?
No, I'm not buying what the 49ers are selling.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that one. I think that they'll take Jimmy G and then they'll pick a linebacker in the first round or trade down or something.
Yeah, if you can get that without getting like a guy like Micah Parsons, I'll take that. Like,
slam dunk.
I guarantee it. If they traded up for a quarterback, I'd still get hyped because it. You still get excited about that, but if you get even like a guy like Lance or Fields, that'd be very cool. But I'm trying to think of, again, is there a more pragmatic organization than the Patriots? Like, I feel it's going to be going with Jimmy G.
It's just not what they do. It's just not what they do. So I think that it's more likely they trade down and get Jimmy G and roll with that group. We'll see. But Connor, great job. We appreciate it. We'll have you on again soon. It'd be great.
Absolutely. Once the playoffs get rolling, feel free to hit me up.
Absolutely. That'd be great.
And thanks again to Connor Ryan from the Boston Sports Journal. He returns for a second trip. We're getting a lot of return guests, which is phenomenal. We'll have a couple more return guests coming up down the line here, too. You know, people like to come on.
It seems like they like it.
Yeah. Doesn't it really? I mean, doesn't it? I mean, typically when you come back for more, you like it. I mean, that's at least what they tell me.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like it.
You know,
I mean, they could be putting on a brave face, good front.
Could. They could be feeling bad for us. Sorry.
I mean, that's definitely a possibility.
Yeah, that, I mean, it has,
feeling
it's
sorry
the, it's
for
not
us.
The first time. All right. You know what it's time for? We haven't done this in a little bit. Time for some missed connections. All I see is missed opportunity. And here is my missed connection for this week. Three women who found me bleeding in the Old Port.
Whoa, 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 whoa. What?
Yes. Yes. This person was bleeding in the Old Port in Portland, Maine. Three women found this person. So you gave me a ride to my friends and they cleaned me up and got me to the ER. I'd love to thank you for helping / saving me because I had lost all memory of the incident.
Oh,
it was
no.
Clearly not in a safe situation.
Oh, my God.
Just to identify myself, me, I am a tall brunette with blood all over my head. Do you remember me?
I think I do. I think I remember the person bludgeoned in the Old Port. I mean, how could those three women ever forget her?
Bloody head.
I'm the woman bleeding from my head.
Wow. She must have just taken a digger, got a little drunk.
She probably stumbled off a curb.
Smashed her head.
Smashed her head in the street.
That would have been tough the next day, huh? Holy moly.
Talk about waking up with a hangover. You wake up, got missing teeth, and your head's bleeding. And...
like the hangover?
Yeah.
How did I lose a tooth? Yeah, I was just out at the Old Port drinking.
All of a sudden, I don't have any teeth. All right, here's my missed connection. All I see is missed opportunity. To the guy in the Camaro in Quincy tonight, nice car. Hope you saw my thumbs up. I was in the gray Mazda.
What is this, 1988?
Jesus. That's it. That's all it says.
This is a gray Mazda. Yeah. Hey, the Camaro. Hey, buddy. I saw you in the Camaro. I was in the Mazda. Remember me?
Nice car. I hope you saw my thumbs up.
I don't know. I don't remember you.
I was in the Mazda.
I remember you. Were your head bleeding? I don't remember you.
I don't remember you.
Mazda. Yeah. Have you remembered any Mazdas you've ever driven by?
Maybe my wife has a Mazda.
There you go.
Remember that one.
I mean, if you drove by like a Lamborghini, then yeah, then I
remember. Well, I mean, would you send somebody a note about a Camaro?
No.
It's a fucking Camaro. Yeah. It's not a Bentley.
No.
It's not an Aston Martin.
Hey, nice car.
You know,
again, in 1988, yeah, it was a damn fine automobile.
but I want to make you happy. Let's hook up on Craigslist.
My Mazda. Priceless. Tell you, people just looking for love.
Tell you what it's really about. It's about the connections.
It is about the connections. All I see is missed opportunity. It is. And we have several connections here on the Sports and Ship podcast. Another brilliant episode. Thanks again to John Butchergrass and Connor Ryan and more shenanigans and tomfoolery and chicanery.
And Ballyhoo.
And Ballyhoo coming up again next week. It's been another great episode, Smitty. We're getting close to the one-year anniversary of the Sports and Ship podcast, which is right around the June 7th was our first episode. So it's coming up here in 6 weeks or so.
We're closing in. So we're going to have to do something probably big for that
something
one.
Something big. A biggin.
We probably should look into some guests.
Maybe some. Hey, would you like to be on our one-year anniversary episode?
Yep.
Yeah, maybe we should look into like trying to get a big one, a biggin.
I mean, we've already had some big guests, so it's going to be difficult to top what we've done already. We do have, you know, a few listeners every week.
We do. We do have a few. A few. A smattering.
A smattering.
Yes.
A smattering of applause and a smattering of listeners.
You know, Butchergrass is now number one. Of all of our guests and Twitter followers, he has just under 400,000 Twitter followers. He is now number one. He surpassed Mike Reese, who was our previous holder of the most Twitter followers for a guest.
Maybe we should shoot. I mean, this won't happen, so don't get your hopes up, people.
Right.
But we should shoot to try to get someone for our one-year anniversary that has 1 million.
1 million.
1 million.
At least 1 million.
At least 1 million Twitter followers.
Hey, it's only another 500,000 more than... A little over 500,000 more than Butchie. A million or more.
I think that's what we should shoot for. We're going for 1 million for the 1 year.
Hey, let's try that. Try that.
Like I said, people, okay?
Yeah.
Paying attention.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
No, it's not at all.
But that's what our goal is. So if you know anybody that has 1 million Twitter followers, or if you want to get us to 1 million Twitter followers by our 1 year anniversary, then we would, you know, technically we would make it just by being on with ourselves.
Right. It's more likely that way. Right. But yeah, let's try that. Yeah, let's try that.
Okay.
So another great episode. Thanks everybody for listening. Have a wonderful week.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Change the difference between what you want and what you need. There's a key, your adventure for today. What do you do between horns of the